She gave the patronizing smirk of someone who's had first chance at a less than delicious piece of sausage, but has fastidiously rejected it. Page 35. Indeed, Odysseus had been among the suitors for her hand, and like every other man on earth, he desperately wanted to win her. Now he was competing for what was at best only second prize. Helen strolled away, having delivered her sting. The maids began discussing her splendid necklace, her scintillating earrings, her perfect nose, her elegant hairstyle, her luminous eyes, the tastefully woven border of her shining robe. It was as if I wasn't there, and it was my wedding day. All of this was a strain on the nerves. I started to cry, as I would do so often in the future, and was taken to lie down on my bed. Thus I missed the race itself. Odysseus won it. He cheated, as I later learned. My father's brother, Uncle Tyndarus, father of Helen, though, as I've told you, some said that Zeus was a real father, helped him to do it. He mixed the wine of the other contestants with a drug that slowed them down, though not so much as they would notice. To Odysseus he gave a potion that had the opposite effect. Page 36. I understand that this sort of thing has become a tradition and is still practiced in the world of the living when it comes to athletic contests. Why did Uncle Tyndarus help my future husband in this way? They were neither friends nor allies. What did Tyndarus stand to gain? My uncle would not have helped anyone, believe me, simply out of the goodness of his heart, a commodity that was in short supply. One story has it that I was the payment for a service Odysseus had rendered to Tyndarus. When they were all competing for Helen and things were getting more and more angry, Odysseus made each contestant swear an oath that whoever won Helen must be defended by all of the others if any other man tried to take her away from the winner. In that way, he calmed things down and allowed the match with Menelaus to proceed smoothly. He must have known he had no hope himself. It was then, so the rumor goes, that he struck the bargain with Tyndarus. In return for assuring a peaceful and very profitable wedding for the radiant Helen, Odysseus would get plain Jane, Penelope. Page 37. But I have another idea, and here it is. Tyndarus and my father, Icarius, were both kings of Sparta. They were supposed to rule alternately, one for a year and the other the next, turn and turn about. But Tyndarus wanted the throne for himself alone, and indeed he later got it. It would stand to reason that he'd sounded out the various suitors on their prospects and their plans, and had learned that Odysseus shared the newfangled idea that the wife should go to the husband's family rather than the other way around. It would suit Tyndarus fine if I could be sent far away, me and any sons I might bear. That way, there would be fewer to come to the aid of Icarius in the event of an open conflict. Whatever was behind it, Odysseus cheated and won the race. I saw Helen smiling maliciously as she watched the marriage rites. She thought I was being pawned off on an uncouth dolt who would haul me off to a dreary breakwater, and she was not displeased. Page 38. She'd probably known well beforehand that the fix was in. As for me, I had trouble making it through the ceremony, the sacrifices of animals, the offerings to the gods, the lustral sprinklings, the libations, the prayers, the interminable songs. I felt quite dizzy. I kept my eyes downcast, so all I could see of Odysseus was the lower part of his body. Short legs, I kept thinking, even at the most solemn moments. This was not an appropriate thought. It was trivial and silly, and it made me want to giggle. But in my own defense, I must point out that I was only 15. Page 39. Chapter 7. The Scar. And so I was handed over to Odysseus, like a package of meat. A package of meat in a wrapping of gold, mind you. A sort of gilded blood pudding. But perhaps that is too crude a simile for you. Let me add that meat was highly valued among us. The aristocracy ate lots of it. Meat, 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 and all they ever did was roast it. Ours was not an age of haute cuisine. Oh, I forgot. There was also bread. Flat bread, that is. Bread, bread, bread. And wine, wine, wine. We did have the odd fruit or vegetable, but you'd probably never heard of these because no one put them into the songs much. The gods wanted meat as much as we did, but all they ever got from us was the bones and fat, thanks to a bit of rudimentary sleight of hand by Prometheus. Only an idiot would have been deceived by a bag of bad cow parts disguised as good ones, and Zeus was deceived, which goes to show that the gods were not always as intelligent as they wanted us to believe. Page 40. I can say this now because I'm dead. I wouldn't have dared say it earlier. You could never tell when one of the gods might be listening, disguised as a beggar or an old friend or a stranger. It's true that I sometimes doubted their existence, these gods, but during my lifetime I considered it prudent not to take any risks. There were lots of everything at my wedding feast. Great glistening hunks of meat, great wads of fragrant bread, great flagons of mellow wine. It was amazing that the guests didn't burst on the spot. They stuffed themselves so full. Nothing helps gluttony along so well as eating food you don't have to pay for yourself, as I learned from later experience. We ate with our hands in those days. There was a lot of gnawing and some heavy-duty chewing, but it was better that way. No sharp utensils that could be snatched up and plunged into a fellow guest who might have annoyed you. Page 41. At any wedding preceded by a contest, there were bound to be a few sore losers, but no unsuccessful suitor lost his temper at my feast. It was more as if they'd failed to win an auction for a horse. The wine was mixed too strong, so there were many fuddled heads. Even my father, King Icarius, got quite drunk. He suspected he had a trick played on him by Tyndareus and Odysseus. He was almost sure they'd cheated, but he couldn't figure out how they'd done it. And this made him angry, and when he was angry, he drank even more and dropped insulting comments about people's grandparents. But he was a king, so there were no duels. Odysseus himself did not get drunk. He had a way of appearing to drink a lot without actually doing it. He told me later that if a man lives by his wits, as he did, he needs to have those wits always at hand and kept sharp, like axes or swords. Only fools, he said, were given to bragging about how much they could drink. It was bound to lead to swilling competitions and then to inattention and the loss of one's powers, and that would be when your enemy would strike. Page 42. As for me, I couldn't eat a thing. I was too nervous. I sat there shrouded in my bridal veil, hardly daring to glance at Odysseus. I was certain he would be disappointed in me once he'd lifted that veil and made his way in through the cloak and the girdle and the shimmering robe in which I'd been decked out. But he wasn't looking at me, and neither was anyone else. They were all staring at Helen, who was dispensing dazzling smiles right and left, not missing a single man. She had a way of smiling that made each one of them feel that secretly she was in love with him alone. I suppose it was lucky that Helen was distracting everyone's attention, because it kept them from noticing me and my trembling and my awkwardness. I wasn't just nervous. I was really afraid. The maids had been filling my ears with tales about how, once I was in the bridal chamber, I would be torn apart as the earth is by the plow, and how painful and humiliating that would be. Page 43. As for my mother, she'd stopped swimming around like a porpoise long enough to attend my wedding, for which I was less grateful than I ought to have been. There she sat on her throne beside my father, robed in cool blue, a small puddle gathering at her feet. She did make a little speech to me as the maids were changing my costume yet again, but I didn't consider it to be a helpful one at the time. It was nothing if not oblique, but then all naiads are oblique. Here is what she said. Water does not resist. Water flows. When you plunge your hand into it, all you feel is a caress. Water is not a solid wall. It will not stop you. But water always goes where it wants to go, and nothing in the end can stand against it. Water is patient. Dripping water wears away a stone. Remember that, my child. Remember you are half water. If you can't go through an obstacle, go around it. Water does. After the ceremonies and the feasting, there was the usual procession to the bridal chamber with the usual torches and vulgar jokes and drunken yelling. Page 44. The bed had been garlanded, the threshold sprinkled, the libations poured. The gatekeeper had been posted to keep the bride from rushing out in horror and to stop her friends from breaking down the door and rescuing her when they heard her scream. All of this was play-acting. The fiction was that the bride had been stolen and the consummation of a marriage was supposed to be a sanctioned rape. It was supposed to be a conquest, a trampling of a foe, a mock killing. There was supposed to be blood. Once the door had been closed, Odysseus took me by the hand and sat me down on the bed. "Forget everything you've been told," he whispered. "I'm not going to hurt you, or not very much. But it would help us both if you could pretend. I've been told you're a clever girl. Do you think you could manage a few screams? That will satisfy them. They're listening at the door. And then they'll leave us in peace, and we can take our time to become friends." Page 45. This was one of his great secrets as a persuader. He could convince another person that the two of them together faced a common obstacle and that they needed to join forces in order to overcome it. He could draw almost any listener into a collaboration, a little conspiracy of his own making. Nobody could do this better than he. For once, the stories don't lie. And he had a wonderful voice as well, deep and sonorous. So, of course, I did as he asked. Somewhat later, I found that Odysseus was not one of those men who, after the act, simply roll over and begin to snore. Not that I am aware of this common male habit through my own experience, but as I've said, I've listened a lot to the maids. No, Odysseus wanted to talk, and he was an excellent raconteur, as I was happy to listen. I think this is what he valued most in me, my ability to appreciate his stories. It was an underrated talent in women. I'd had occasion to notice the long scar on his thigh, and so he proceeded to tell me the story of how he got it. Page 46. As I've already mentioned, his grandfather was Autolycus, who claimed the god Hermes was his father. That may have been a way of saying that he was a crafty old thief, cheat, and liar, and that luck had favored him in these kinds of activities. Autolycus was the father of Odysseus's mother, Anticlea, who'd married King Laertes of Ithaca and was therefore now my mother-in-law. There was a slanderous item going around about Anticlea, that she'd been seduced by Sisyphus, who was the true father of Odysseus. But I found it difficult to believe, as who would want to seduce Anticlea? It would be like seducing a prow. But let the tale stand for the moment. Sisyphus was a man so tricky, he was said to have cheated death twice, once by fooling King Hades into putting on handcuffs that Sisyphus refused to unlock, once by talking Persephone into letting him out of the underworld because he hadn't been properly buried and thus didn't belong on the dead side of the river Styx. So if we admit the rumor about Anticlea's infidelity, Odysseus had crafty and unscrupulous men on two of the main branches of his family tree.